Right, the time is 3 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. A very good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of the Early Morning Scoop on your favorite radio station, or the talk radio station that is Eagle FM. I'm your host, Lois Ashimi, and of course, I'm very, very happy again to have you today, whether you with us today, and whether you are tuning in from the app, from the website. We really, really appreciate you. I really appreciate you. Actually, I wish I could even see who is listening to me. Like, I really, really do appreciate you for, I mean, waking up and just listen and tune in. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And of course, as usual, I'll be giving you the crucial discussion on economic affairs, as usual, talking about the trade policy, entrepreneurship, and of course, I'll be giving you that until the hour of 7:30. But before we jump into the latest economic news update, please, from across Africa, of course, please do not forget to connect with us or follow us on our social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Eagle FM Namibia, as well as on the Villager newspapers pages on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Please be sure also to connect with us, into our WhatsApp channel that is Eagle Media House on WhatsApp. Just for the daily news update, or rather to catch up on the daily news update, and of course the newspaper. And like today that we are, will be writing the good stories for you, and you'll be getting or the billers so that you at least be able to expect or to know what I expect of tomorrow's a newspaper. So please don't forget to rather subscribe to the WhatsApp channel that is Eagle Media House. Yeah, Eagle Media House, that's the channel on WhatsApp that you need to follow or rather subscribe. And please do not forget to stay informed on the go by downloading the Eagle FM app, available on both Google Play and the App Store. So that we, at least wherever you go, wherever you are, you can able to tune in to Eagle FM. And yeah, to start off internationally, is that in the heart of Kenya's great Rift Valley, and the Naivasha is experiencing a quiet agricultural revolution driven by avocados, often referred to as green gold. Now, the region's higher quality avocados are increasingly reaching tables worldwide, with China emerging as a significant market. We might take a listen to this update.
Pattern of vibrant green avocado trees, their glossy leaves glinting under the golden evening sun. As I absorb the serene beauty and symmetry of the avocado farms, I cast my eyes on a farmer inspecting the condition of the fruits, the majority of them approaching maturity. This is Richard Wafula, the general manager at Sunripe Kenya and responsible for the avocado sector. He tells me this is one of the company's key avocado production sites, spanning about 200 hectares. They grow Hass and Fuerte varieties, which are in high demand globally, especially in China.
And this is the land that we also wanted to do our big land like this, that we can have our own production and proper management of quality, because now our orders were increasing from different destinations.
But Sunripe doesn't just rely on this land. It can't keep up with the high demand they see for avocados. Wafula says over 3/4 of Kenya's avocado production comes from smallholder farmers, with the company enlisting over 2,000 local farmers in Naivasha and nearby regions to source additional fruit. However, many lack experience.
According to reports, a lot of Kenyan farmers lose value on their products due to poor handling of their crops from the farm all the way to the market, right?
Yes, that's right.
Wafula says poor quality translates to a lot of rejection as far as global markets like China are concerned. To ensure this is significantly cut, Sunripe offers training, seedlings, and support to farmers.
And as we speak right now, the farmers, there's no farmer who can get a rejection percent above, say, 5 to 6%. their rejection level is very lower than that. And the farmers are happy because if they have about 1 ton and they are getting about 10 kilos of rejection or maybe 5 kilos of rejection, the farmers are very happy.
From the farm, the avocados come to the state-of-the-art processing facility. This is where the fruit is prepared for its journey to markets as far away as China. Sha says this facility is the heart of their export operations. Every avocado you see here is carefully sorted, washed, graded, and packed to meet the strict standards of markets like China and Europe. He says since Kenya signed a trade agreement with China in 2022 for fresh avocados, the company's business has seen tremendous growth.
With over 1 billion people in the Chinese market alone, we have found that avocados are the 11th most eaten fruit in the Chinese market. Obviously, the big fruits are apples, citrus, bananas, watermelons. Avocados are number 11, but growing at the rate of 300% a year. Consumption is really increasing.
China's demand for avocados is huge and largely driven by a growing middle class who have an appetite for healthy premium produce. Kenya's avocado trade with China has skyrocketed since the 2022 agreement. In 2023, it exported approximately 10,000 metric tons of avocados to China, valued at over $20 million. By 2024, this figure had grown to an estimated 15,000 metric tons, with projections for 2025 suggesting even higher volumes.
So we need the Kenyan government and the private sector to work together to go and start promoting Kenyan fruit. China has 5 tier 1 cities. You got Shanghai, you got Beijing, you got Chongqing, you got all these tier 1 cities. We need to go and tell them to buy from Kenya.
China's appreciation for avocados has not only boosted Kenya's economy, but also...
All right, there you had it from Kenya. Now to move on to the next item is that the recent data revealed that Rwandan farmers are struggling less than 1% of their harvest, despite an increase in food production this year. Now experts and also the farmers attribute the rising post-harvest losses to inadequate handling practices and severe lack of storage facilities. Now this situation poses a significant challenge to the country's agricultural sector and of course food security.
Despite predictable weather and better farming methods, Rwandan farmers still store an extremely low amount of their harvest, according to the Seasonal Agriculture Survey 2025A. This has raised alarms over food security and household readiness for shocks like drought, price hikes, and supply disruptions. Farmers Wimana Francine and Alexandre Ndereimana offer a succinct reason.
We don't have enough storage facilities. What we request from the government is to provide enough sheds and storage facilities across the country and make sure these facilities are well disinfected.
I believe that drying and storage facilities like the one shown here are key in improving food storage, especially in the eastern province, where maize is widely grown.
Post-harvest loss remain a key factor in low food storage levels across the country. Experts say poor handling of harvests is to blame. Abraham Matai, country manager of Africa Improved Foods, a leading manufacturer of fortified foods in the region, says maize and other grains are often rejected by buyers and processors due to poor storage and damage.
Given the agroclimatic conditions in Rwanda, where it is quite wet during the harvesting season, the incidence of aflatoxin was very, very high. In fact, in 2016-17, when we started, we were rejecting almost 90% of the grains that we were looking at. And aflatoxin is actually dangerous if people are exposed to it over a very long period of time. It can lead to a very high incidence of liver cancer.
Experts also suggest better practices would reduce post-harvest losses from 75% to 25% and increase the amount of food safely stored for both market supply and household consumption.
So it starts from right from the farming practices. So we have a team of eight agronomists and assisted by a team of field agents who work with agronomists. And they go to each of these farmers during the growing season and at the end of the season. So they actually help the farmers in terms of the right, farming practices. And they also advises the farmers the right time to harvest the crop.
Most of the harvest is quickly consumed, sold or used for seed, wages or batter, leaving no reserves. The government has now allocated almost $35 million to build shellers, drying machines and small silos for short-term storage. This is part of a broader strategy to improve both the quality and the quantity of food harvests and reserves.
Africa Improved Foods had 10 silos here that can comfortably store 20 metric tons of soybeans and maize that can comfortably serve their market all year round. They believe that with the provision of such facilities across the country, it could go a long way in reducing post-harvest losses and improve the quality of their production.
All right, there you heard it from Rwanda. The time is 14 minutes to the 6 a.m. And of course, there you heard it from Rwanda. Of course, this is not only in Rwanda.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional
right. There you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Of course, I was speaking about not only Rwanda that is facing the post-harvest losses. Of course, even here in the country, here, I know we understand that most of the African country, we receive a very good rainfall this year, and we expect a very good harvest. And of course, that's what we are even experiencing now already. But then, like, what about you? What do you do now instead of course, you not losing your harvest or your good harvest? Yes, you need to ask yourself that. I remember we once spoke to agro expert, that is May Loide from Namibian Agronomic Board, and then she really emphasized the buying, or I mean the selling. Now you need to now sell some or most of your product to avoid you losing out, not you even getting anything, but of course your product might be lost or spoiled because of the poor storage facility. So yes, that we can relate here also in the country, that okay, you as a farmer listening to me right now, what do you do? What are you planning to do then, since now you get a very good harvest? Yes, now to move on to the next item is a doctor who start staging at a sit-in outside the KZN Premier office says while they sit unemployed, conditions are dire at public health facility. We might take a listen to this particular update.
In the last hour, you spoke to one of the doctors protesting outside there. Who is going to be meeting, if anyone, and engaging with those who are protesting at the Premier's office?
Well, Michelle, they do hope that the Premier is going to show up at some point. We are, of course, outside the Premier's office, but I'm told that in the past they have raised concerns, and it seems as if they've spoken once or twice to the MEC of Health, but we're told that the last time they had a conversation with the MEC of Health in the province was around March. But perhaps let's get more insight in terms of the program. progress that has been made or progress that has been said to them over the past few months. I want to start off by talking about the broader crisis when you are looking at the healthcare system that we have here in the province of KZN.
Yes, so it is terrible what is happening. I think you would know the case of a young man in Prince Mshweni Hospital who passed away on duty because he was not allowed to take a sick leave. And that is an intern. That is a person who is in training. So he shouldn't have to be, the system shouldn't have to be relying so heavily on him that they can't allow him to go off. We are the people who have done 6 years of medical school. We have done 3 years of training. We are fully qualified doctors. We are the people that should have been working there and handling the pressure of patients coming in. So the problem is even broader because patients they wait long times in queues, and sometimes we even turn them away. Because in my 3 years of experience, many times I've had to come out to patients while they are on a line at 4 p.m., half past 4, and tell them and ask them to come back tomorrow. You don't know how long they've been waiting in that queue. You don't know how sick they are. We try to triage and prioritize those who are very sick, but the problem is dire, especially when it comes to now patients who need operations and all of those things. So it takes a long time for people to get operations and all of those procedures.
I want you to talk to me about the conversation that you've had with the MEC of Health or even with the Premier. What is the information that has been shared by them, particularly when you're looking at reasons why you remain unemployed? This is now post your community service.
Maybe just to give a background, we started this protest early as January, in engaging them via emails and other forms. And we did the first protest. We went and then we stopped because of they told us the problems with the budget, which we understood because there were problems with the budget. And then we came back in March, and in March they also they met with us now in March. The HOT, we were expecting a meeting with the MEC, but only to find when we get into the boardroom, only the HOT is there. The MEC is nowhere to be found. We have not met with the MEC since we started this thing. Which is really, we ask ourselves, what is really the reason? Because we see her going to rallies, we see her having podcasts, and also to everywhere except giving us time to meet with us. And we waited for her for weeks. In any case, so we met with the HOD. In that meeting, they promised to continue engagements with us on a weekly basis. They promised to meet with us to engage with us, and they promised a meeting on the 18th of April, which never materialized. And a lot of other promises were made that never materialized. So as we stand right now, from the department, there's nothing concrete that they've given us to say employment is coming. And the budget is there. The need is there. The vacancies are there. So we wonder what is the holdup.
What do you think is the holdup? You're mentioning that the budget is there, KZN currently being the only province yet to advertise those posts. What do you think is the issue? Could it possibly be a provincial government issue? I mean, you're mentioning how the calls that you've made have fallen on deaf ears. What do you think is the issue?
At this moment, unfortunately, we can only speculate because, as I've said, they've not engaged with us in a meaningful way. So we don't know really what issues they are facing, but we do know that the province is under a lot of strain financially. We've seen service providers also protesting here with the PSA right at these gates for payments of overdue payments on services that they've rendered. So there's an inkling that the province is facing financial difficulties, but they're not talking to us. And the problem is that allocation has been made outside of the budget of the Department of Health for the employment of doctors. So really, we don't know what's the holdup on that.
Right there, you had it. Now to move on to the next item in Zambia is that the Zambian government has now held a stakeholder engagement with the private sector aimed at exploring collaborative ways to reduce commodity prices for the benefit of the citizens. Now, Commerce, Trade and Industry Minister Chipoka Mulenga says with the recent reductions in fuel prices and, of course, the strengthening of the kwacha against the U.S. dollars, now it is now imperative for the cost of goods to begin reflecting those positive economic shifts. We might take a listen to this particular update.
of petroleum products in the country have seen a downward trend in recent months. The kwacha, on the other hand, has also appreciated against the United States dollar. Government and some citizens are, however, concerned that these positive developments have not trickled down to people through reduced prices of goods and services. Commerce, Trade and Industry Minister Chipoka Mlenga has engaged some stakeholders, among them the Zambia Association of Manufacturers, Zambia Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and Shoprite chain stores. During the meeting, Mr. Mlenga asked the industry players why commodity prices are not reducing when economic fundamentals are favorable.
It's important that we address what we've discussed, and I want to thank ZAM and Zaki, including Shoprite and everyone, because we have committed that from here you will sit with your members where we can be magnanimous to see that we translate a good economic response in terms of fuel, the kwacha stability, to the end user down there.
And the stakeholders have assured government that citizens will start seeing reduced commodity prices within a month.
We are committed to bringing those prices down. This week itself, last week, the week before, we've been engaging our suppliers, many of whom are part of ZAM, to talk about the factors that have come down and therefore their prices or their costing, so us must come down.
We have tried to reach out to our members to see how we can push this benefit down to the people. And I'm sure through our discussions, we're going to find ways to work together and make sure that we do whatever we can to see prices on the shelves come down.
Zambia Chamber of Commerce and Industry Chief Executive Officer Elvin Nasilele has commended government for putting up favorable policies for the private sector to thrive.
Honorable Minister, we would want to thank you again and commend you. And what I would call for is that there should be continued collaboration between your office and us from the private sector.
It's very critical that even as prices are being determined in the economy, we are able to balance the three aspects of profit, people and planet.
The minister has also revealed that government is engaging other oil-producing countries to ensure there is constant supply of fuel in the country.
All right, there you had it. Now to move on to the next item is that the ECOWAS leaders have concluded the 67th Ordinary Summit in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, where they committed to a fast-tracking a threat by force and, of course, advancing toward a single currency. You might take a listen.
After 2 years as ECOWAS chair, Nigerian President Bola Tinubu hands over the reins to his Sierra Leonean counterpart, Julius Maada Bio.
A round of applause, please.
Bio promises to build on the solid foundation which his predecessor laid, restoring democracy, driving economic integration, rebuilding institutional trust, and most importantly, boosting regional security.
Terrorism, political instability, illicit arms flow, and transnational organized crimes continue to test the resilience of our nations and the effectiveness of our institutions. We must overhaul our collective security architecture, from intelligence sharing to rapid response, to confront new threats with unity and resolve.
Security concerns are mounting across the region. Insurgent attacks and cross-border crimes persist, especially in northern Nigeria. And Tinubu pushed for urgent action.
This is why the ECOWAS standby force must move from the concept to operational reality now. I am a little bit worried about the slow pace of its activation, which is taking longer than desired. We must act decisively to operationalize the ECOWAS standby force on the fight against terrorism to serve as an instrument for peace and stability for our region.
But funding remains a hurdle. The bloc needs $2.6 billion to deploy the force. Ministers have been tasked to find homegrown funding options.
We get frustrated by funding, and this is why you see many African peace support operations transitioning to United Nations, to become United Nations missions. If you look around, this is what you'll find. So our leaders have now instructed the ministers to get together and come up with a proposal that they will look at.
The single...
Right, there you had it. The time is 28 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that in the build up to the G20 summit, the C20's launch, and of course the midterm policy dialogue is now being held in Sandton, north of Johannesburg. Now the C20 aims to influence the global policy, amplify the voices of the civil society, and of course ensure that people and planet remain at the head of the G20's agenda. We might take a listen.
Oh, and thank you very much for this opportunity of this conversation with us, and good evening to your viewers as well. As you have correctly indicated, that C20 is a civil society engagement group as part of the structures and processes of G20. And so South Africa is no different in giving that voice of civil society an opportunity to express its policy proposals into the mainstream of what governments will be considering and processing in their own structures. And so this is a significant moment in South Africa because we have a national apex.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
organizations, national sectoral organizations, alongside small-scale community-based organizations and grassroots organizations gathering here in Sandton from yesterday until tomorrow to panel beat a mix of policy proposals that we can start to champion and advocate for in the mainstream of government processes. And so this is a significant opportunity as well, because South Africa, as part of the family of countries of or nations that are part of G20 or a group of 20 countries, will only be able to host another G20 summit only after 19 years. Mm-hmm. In the rotation of countries that host this. And of greater significance is that South Africa is the only African country that is a full member of the G20. Although there is a development now where the African Union has been adopted as one of the economic blocs into the G20. And so in that consideration, South Africa does not only carry the aspirations of what the South African society aspires towards in terms of G20. It has to carry the hopes and the aspirations of the entire African continent through pan-African perspectives of what the rest of the other countries will be challenged to do in promoting and attracting investments, promoting growth, and creating development in the world.
As you speak about panel beating a mix of policy proposals, what will be the focus of your dialogue as you bring these proposals to the table?
Well, there are 14 working groups that have been established by government. And as the civil society engagement group, we took a conscious decision that we're going to establish 14 working groups that mirror those of government, particularly because we don't want any of our policy advocacy issues.
According to an internal State Department cable seen by
in terms of what government will be processing. What will be the difference between our working groups and those of government will be the content of what defines the work that will be done in that working group. Let me make an example that there may be a theme that government has adopted on solidarity, equality, and sustainability. We may adopt the same theme, but begin to give it our own interpretation and meaning as civil society as to what do we understand solidarity to mean in the same way as equality and sustainability. So it will be an equal playing field where we deal with the same issues so that we compare apples with apples, but imbue those themes with our own interpretation and meaning as civil society. And so, in the scope of those working groups, there are about six clusters that we have identified as civil society. The first of those deal with human development related matters, which would be on education, health, skills development, and employment. That's one cluster of issues.
Yeah.
There is a cluster of issues that is focused on investments, on inclusive growth, on trade, debt and aid, including global financial architecture. The third cluster of issues is focused on just transitions, not just the energy transition.
So, Tulani, if you'll allow me just for a split second there, as you talk about, you know, having these side-by-side topics, how are you going to ensure that as you bring your voice, as you push for a roadmap for civil society participation in the policy and decision-making processes, that, you know, it's more than just a talk shop and that you are essentially bringing something to the table, an angle that is effective, that will have impact?
So in this policy dialogue that we're having now, as we are gathered in Sentin, all our 14 working groups actually convened their meetings here on the floor of the dialogue. They have already identified the high-level strategic issues that each working group is going to advocate for.
All right, there you have it. The time is 35 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandisoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa zetu. Moambo, dengira selma, onarajeta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari jamano tano, oniari. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription.
Right, it's 38 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop now to start off here locally. And thank you so much again for staying with us, or really for just joining us. Thank you so much for joining us in this Early Morning Scoop. This is a show where we give you, or we dive into the very important discussion that you need to hear on the policy, talking about entrepreneurship, and of course we talk about the economic affairs. That's what we give you here until the off 7:30. Now to start off is that we're going to start with the solar station. Solar power station now plays a very, very pivotal role in providing clean and renewable energy, reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, and of course fostering a sustainable future. Now they offer economic advantages also, such as job creation, talking about lower energy costs while also boosting energy security and independence. Now, NamPower has then officially kicked off constructing of the 1.6 billion Namibian dollars solar power station. That is the 100 megawatt solar plant located northwest of Rospina. This project now marks NamPower's largest solar installation to date, and of course aim to diminish Namibians' reliance on imported electricity and fossil fuels, thereby significantly enhancing the national energy mix. Now the power station is now expected to create over 300 jobs during its construction phase, and will now also allocate 25% of the contract value to the local content. Now let's also now hear from Paulus Hangula, an economist who now will help us unpack this development. We might take a listen.
Yes,
speak to us about this whole subject. How will maybe this project affect electricity tariff and, of course, the cost of energy for consumers and, of course, industries in the future?
Okay, thank you very much. Maybe just to emphasize from the onset that globally, there is a move towards more cleaner energy, specifically renewable energy. And I think this is the right path for Namibia as well. There is pressure internationally, and efforts internationally to reduce, carbon emissions, and just ensure that at the end of the day, we have cleaner energy. Now, in terms of solar energy, in recent times, solar energy has become cheaper, due to various factors, including the manufacturing cost, of course, also economies of scale in terms of production, but also in terms of technology advancement, in terms of the infrastructure, but also the fact that there are efforts by governments and international partners lobbying for cleaner energy. So obviously, there are opportunities for government incentives as well as international partner incentives to support setting up of renewable energy infrastructure. So that obviously will result into relatively much more cost-effective to set up a renewable energy plant as compared to a few years ago. Now, in terms of how it will translate into or whether it will influence electricity tariffs, obviously that is something that at this moment I believe it's speculative. Generally, I think it will have some influence. Perhaps it may not necessarily be from the onset, because of course you have the cost of setting up the start of the operation, and those economies of scale may not have been realized from the onset will not have to be realized from the onset. Mm. Also, the cost will have to be recouped at some point. The investment will have to be recouped. Mm. But I believe in the long run,
yeah,
there's definitely going to be an influence, a positive influence in terms of reduction of tariffs, because generally solar energy in the long run, it will be relatively cheaper as compared to conventional energy production and the usage of fossil fuels. I believe that the fact that it's a renewable, mm-hmm, and you are using renewable sources, which is the sun. You are not relying on oil or natural gas that has to be extracted or processed further to be used into the production of energy, but you are relying on the sun, which we have plenty of in a calendar year. The majority of the seasons that we have is basically have sun. Mm. And only a few months that perhaps you have a rainy season.
Yeah.
I mean, this is good for us as a semi-arid country.
Okay.
And I think it's a source that we have plenty of. And definitely, at the end of the day, I anticipate there will be a reduction. That is for both consumers as well as industries in future, maybe not in the immediate future upon construction and commissioning. But
to all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We will save at USAVE.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
We are going to see benefits for both consumers and industries.
Thank you so much for that, Mr. Hangula. I know you highlighted the best or the significance of the having the clean energy and renewable energy. Just elaborate more on what role does maybe this project also, or the solar project, play in Namibians' transition to clean energy and, of course, renewable energy?
In general, I think the support is there for any type of renewable energy. I think we have also seen there is a strong drive towards the use of other types of green energy. Mm. There are efforts, for example, to use green hydrogen and so on. But in general, I think the focus is on any form of green energy. Of course, as long as it's viable, it's doable, and it will bring about the intended results. Now, having said that, solar energy, in my view, is a cornerstone of renewable energy.
Okay.
I think it's probably one of the most important and one of the easiest to actually venture into. For example, if you talk of hydrogen,
mm-hmm,
it may require some specialties in terms of how do you store it, how do you transport it, and so on.
Mm.
But I think when it comes to solar energy, due to its, as I've indicated, sustainability, given that we have plenty of it, and also its environmental friendliness,
okay,
and also the increased cost effectiveness. I think it's actually one of the most important and also achievable and easier ways to transition into green energy. And it definitely offers a good, clean alternative to fossil fuels. It reduces greenhouse gas emissions. And it just lessens our reliance on finite resources. So for me, it's equally important as well to other efforts that we are also pushing towards green energy. But I think it's a cornerstone. It's something relatively, in my views, easier to do. And will definitely probably yield more benefit for the Namibian economy and the Namibian public at large. And it's I commend the efforts to develop a solar plan.
Okay.
Of course, also other efforts towards green energy.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is one of them that I think definitely in the coming years, it will be up and running, probably earlier than other efforts.
Lastly, before we let you go, Mr. Hangula, is that maybe considering the higher unemployment, of how can the maybe construction of this solar power station now be utilized to boost economic development in that area or in those regions or the southern regions?
Okay, before perhaps even touching on the specific region where the plant will be set up, I think in general there are benefits that will be realized from this project to the overall Namibian economy, because one way of stimulating economic growth it's through incentives and resources that are available to businesses to set up or that would attract investors. So an investor will look at a specific economy and say, can I set up here? What do I need? I need access to certain resources. I need access to energy. I need access to water. And so on. So renewable energy itself, specifically solar energy, it's one that is considered also a bit reliable, perhaps compared to conventional energy. And this is also something that investors can look at and say, yes, at least in terms of the environment for doing business, there is a reliable input that may be required in their production. So this may bring about overall economic benefits to Namibia in terms of more investors coming on board, more businesses setting up, and specifically in the region, in the south of Namibia where the plant will be set up.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when a project of this nature is set up, you are looking both at firstly, backward, as well as forward linkages in terms of the service that the plant will be required, the inputs the plant will be required to have in order to function. And then you're also looking at forward linkages in terms of the transmission or the services that the plant will offer to the specific region, and then the economy at large. Of course, you are looking at now there's going to be employment in terms of the people that are going to firstly contract, and then secondly, who are going to be employed there once the plant has been constructed. Of course, you are going to look at the need for housing. You are going to look at the need for transport services, that could be logistic firms, it could be fuel stations. You are going to look at the need for, of course, household products, So obviously, you're likely to see supermarkets setting up, other stores also setting up, grocery stores, clothing stores, and what have you. And really, you are going to see a booming town, and this has been the case even historically, especially when you're looking at mining activities, for example. Mm-hmm. You will find an area that a mine is set up, and then a town is then created because of the mining activities. And then later on, you will see maybe once the mine closes, that specific town becomes a ghost town. But now in the case of solar energy, that will not be the case because this is likely to be a project that goes on for a very, very long time. Mm. It doesn't have a definite lifespan like a mine, for example, because you are talking of a source that is there. The sun will always be there. So you are going to see the same. You're going to see a development of a town. Development and boost of economic activities to support the functioning of the plant, to also provide offtake services to the products that the plant will be producing, and also to support the needs of the people that will be employed there. And when you do this, of course, the effect, you're going to see a ripple effect throughout the economy, specifically in that area, because if we need a service station, obviously it's going to employ people. If you need transport services, obviously those companies are going to employ people. Mm. Those people are going to need basic services. Of course, you're going to have setting up of infrastructure, roads, public facilities, and so on. Water and electricity, housing. So I see benefits for the specific area, and I think definitely Namibians in that area and throughout Namibia will definitely benefit from some of these opportunities that will be. I think this is the move towards renewable energies. It's a long time coming move, definitely something that, in my views, it's in the right direction. Perhaps we could have done it some years ago, but I think it's never too late to venture into this. And I really commend all those that are involved to develop this project for the efforts before up to this stage and also going forward. I believe that Namibians will definitely benefit. And I encourage those that perhaps may have interest to provide some of the services once the plant is set up or to set up some of the commercial activities in the area once the plant is set up, to be really be on the lookout and just to participate so that everybody benefits, not just in terms of employment, but also in terms of creating employment and also offering any service that a plant will require to function. Mm,
thank you so much, Mr. Angula, for having you.
Thank you.
All right. Right there, you have it. The time is 57 minutes in the half 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, there you heard from Mr. Angula, just indicating that solar energy is cheaper in terms of production, infrastructure, and of course, environmental impact. And of course, here he said that it helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and it's easier to implement. So, of course, we all know that electricity tariffs are high, and Mr. Angula also just noted that having solar energy in the long run will positively influence those tariffs for consumers and, of course, industries. However, he mentioned that this process might take a bit time or take longer, since initial setups now are required before everything can now be put into action. Now, he also pointed out that there are benefits to the overall economic growth of the country, of course, as more investors are also now be able to coming in on the board, and of course, new businesses will also be established in that area or southern area, and of course, employment creation that all will now be able to be in that or bring also impact into the area. Now, additionally, my colleague David Shombe spoke with Priobas Nepolo from Millennium Refrigeration and Electrical Services, now who will now provide further insights on this subject. We might take a listen.
Yes, we are looking at economic development. We are looking at the sector of energy, and we are doing comparative analysis with various sources of energy and how we can make Namibia greater in terms of energy production. Yes, we understand that in SADC region, Namibia is a country with highest or expensive price of electricity. However, it was indicated that Namibia Power Utility, that is NamPower, has officially began constructing 1.6 billion Khaiba solar power station, 100 megawatt solar photovoltaic plant located in northwest of Rosh Pinna. However, for us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with Mr. Kreopas Nepolo, so head of renewable, and it's one of the person who has an understanding in this this sector, and how we can compare what is happening to what have already happened, and also look at what the future holds, particularly in terms of Namibia energy. On top of that, it was also indicated that the power station is expected to create over 300 jobs during the construction phase and allocate 25% of the contract to local content. Now, Mr. Kreopas Nepolo, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing?
Morning, sir. I'm doing awesome. Blessed this morning. How about yourself?
No, I'm doing very well. I hope the listeners are also doing well. Now, let us look at what have been, not what have been proposed, but what is currently happening. How will this project influence electricity tariff and the cost of energy for consumers and industries in the future?
Of course, this renewable project is some of the language that we want to daily be talking about, as it comes in with a lot of benefits. It does, of course, decrease the export of power.
Yeah.
And also during construction phase, it will get a lot of our local residents get temporary jobs, of which some will even be employed permanently through this practice by continuous monitoring and doing maintenance on the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a good initiative that NamPower is bringing to reduce costs and improve clean energy.
Mm-hmm. As somebody who has been in renewable sector for quite a long time, looking at the capacity of this project, what role does this project play in Namibia's transition to clean energy and renewable energy in particular?
It plays a major role. In terms of clean energy, of course, because now the current electricity production that, in includes burning of fossil fuels and the processing of electricity at light is quite of it excess a lot of pollution, which is the negative impact on the environment, which we are now trying to reduce via clean energy.
Yeah.
So all we are going to be doing now is we have our free sun already from, we are Africans, we are a blessed sunny area. So we don't, with renewable, you don't have to process any thing that excess the environment. We don't endanger environment with depletion. We, of course, looking at just producing clean energy without infecting the environment, its end users at large.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking at before we go to the second question, I just want maybe for those who are listening on the radio, because when somebody is talking about 100 megawatt solar photovoltaic plant, how big is that? Just to in simple terms, how big is that 100 megawatt solar plant?
100 megawatt solar plant is quite big. It reduces the export rate to really a high percentage in terms of what they are exporting now. And once it's fitted back in the Nampower alliance, it means that we will have a very, very high improvement in our export. So it reduces the export of power by, it would at least by 2.something% in terms of national export, and the demand, obviously, as a nation, our energy demand will really be small towards these neighbors whom are giving us electricity currently. We are really overloading them with the higher demand, and that is what Nampower has been looking at, and they want us to reduce that energy demand to a certain level. Of course, we have countries in the neighborhood like Zambia who are only having 8 hours a day on electricity, and the rest of the hours they are on load shedding, no power at all. So we don't want to see us in such a situation.
Yeah,
that is why they brought up such a big plant for us to not end up in the same situation like our other neighbors who are really in trouble, their investment in renewable is quite behind.
Yeah.
Would really appreciate Nampower for such an initiative.
Now, the last question, given the high unemployment and minimal economic activities, particularly in the southern region, how can this project, either the construction phase, can be able to boost economic development, particularly in the southern region? How can it boost that economic development?
It will definitely be a huge one for our southern residential local authorities, local residents. When this plant is going to happen, obviously the site will require safety officers.
Yeah.
Which a lot of them are unemployed. They need to come and do some safety measures. The ministry will be involved, of course. We might need one or two temporary people from the Ministry of Environment as a stakeholder to monitor and see if the land is well used, and it's a safe project for this plant. We will need people to issue labor in terms of digging the outskirts in terms of general welding, in terms of mounting structures. All these massive services would be needed, and that will mostly target our local residents, who will, of course, there will be a high rate of employment in this practice, and most definitely we'll have people now who will do what we call after sale and monitoring and continuous maintenance on the plants. So all these are employment opportunities brought to us, and it will really boost our employment during this construction phase and after.
Yes, Cleopas Nepolo, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and thank you very much for your input.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
All right, the time is 7 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that we want to speak on, or rather touch on, the food insecurity in the country, whereas food insecurity remains a very serious challenge in Namibia, affecting a significant portion of the population, of course. And recent analysis shows that 1.15 million people, accounting for 36% of the population, are now facing higher levels of acute food insecurity, urgently necessitating action. Now, every year, a segment of our population now grapples with food scarcity, either due to insufficient production or inability to afford food. Now, this result is now in persistent food insecurity, despite our nation's capability or with the capacity to cultivate various crops, including rice. Now, to shed light on this pressing issue, we'll now listen to a farmer, Martin Shudeni, as he explained what food security is and how it can also be achieved. You might take a listen to this discussion. Just to start off, what is food security?
So food security, really, I would explain it in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
The general way, obviously, is just the how we are able to access and limit our issue of hunger, and also when it comes to economic access of sufficient and safe and nutritious food that meet our dietary needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the general understanding of food security.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to understand it in the Namibian context.
Okay.
In the Namibian context, food security means, you know, we need to reduce our imports when it comes to food. We need to invest in seed production, fertilizer, machinery, and our water systems, and also increase access to finance for farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is food security when it comes to the Namibian context, because just the challenge we have, you know, a report that was published by NAB. We say in 2022-2023,
mm-hmm.
we have imported about almost close to 500 million of food, you know, of fruits and vegetables into Namibia.
Mm.
And also we have imported about close to, I think, 21 million of fertilizers and seeds into the country. So when you talk of food security, it's really a broader thing. It's not just about producing, but it's also about input that accompanies that production.
Can food security be achieved in the country?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. How? Can be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by all stakeholders in the country working together, starting from the government of the Republic of Namibia,
mm-hmm.
Starting from the private sector, the NGOs, starting from the farmers, the youth, and everyone. So, number one, it has to start with capacitating our people with skills and knowledge, as it relates to farming. We need to also improve infrastructure-wise and logistic systems. And I think the biggest thing is to change our mindset when it comes to agriculture. Because, I think it's now far long back that we have the mindset that agriculture is for the poor.
Mm.
But we know that countries that are wealthy is countries that have invested heavily into their agricultural systems. And one of the things we need to really solve first to achieve this, most specifically in rural areas, is improving infrastructure and logistic systems.
Okay.
Because even if you produce when you're in local areas, the challenge is getting access to the market because of longer distances and road conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Many rural areas do not have roads. And for you, as we know, our horticultural producers or many of our vegetable producers are very highly perishable. What we mean by that, let's say for example, you take a tomato.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for you to harvest your tomato from the field and to do the packaging, the grading,
you know, you are already losing out on a lot of tomatoes because of challenges of storage systems. Mm. And if you are to transport it to the market, it's getting bent by the sun because people do not have proper transport systems. Mm. So those are some of the challenges that we have. So for us to achieve this, really, we need to empower smallholder farmers, you know, with proper infrastructures. Yes, we have, we know we have government initiatives such as AMTA, you know, that help with marketing and storage. Yeah, but we need more of these that are closer to the people.
Yeah, now also while you are there, how can then food security be addressed? Now, what crop maybe can be cultivated to address food insecurity? And maybe now, can maybe rice be included among them? Or what is, what are specific crops that can also be included just to address food insecurity?
Yeah. Yeah, with food security or with just producing food as a whole, I think it needs to be based on proper research. Okay. Because we know with Namibia, we are really a diverse country in terms of our different climates that we have. Mm-hmm. We know we have the upper regions, such as Kavango, Caprivi, and then we have our regions here in the center of the north, Oshana, Omusati, or Angwena, which also have their own unique type of climates. And then we have the central areas, you know, Comas, we have Ochozonjupa, we have Omaheke, and then we have down south, where we have Taras region, and all the other regions. And all those regions have its own unique climatic conditions.
Okay.
And through proper research, we are able to really determine which type of crops we are able to really plan there, because like we know in Kavango region, we really have good temperate climatic conditions there. So really we can grow a lot of diverse crops without having a lot of challenges apart from pests and diseases. And our regions such as, here, Oshana, Omusati, Kavango, really, we can also do research apart from just growing on mahango. We need to grow more drought resistant crops. Yeah, because we rely heavily on the rain this side. Mm. So yeah, and also we need to put up proper infrastructure such as maybe some greenhouses to protect our crops from heat. Mm. Yes, from frost and heat.
Okay.
Yes. So we can grow smaller crops like tomatoes, we can grow onions, we can grow carrots, We can grow really all type of crop. It's just a matter of research and understanding our market that is in our surrounding. And also we should not neglect, our food that we, our local food that we usually consume, such as omboga, ombidi. We can also focus on growing those type of food that we already consume just on a bigger scale, you know. We know poultry is one of the biggest markets in Namibia. I believe almost everyone in Namibia consumes poultry products. And poultry products, you know, it's consuming chicken meat, you know, eggs that come from the chicken. It's really one of the biggest market or biggest sector in Namibia, which falls obviously under the livestock sector, which is also a bigger sector. So really it's one sector that mostly us in rural areas that we need to really venture into really aggressively. Mm-hmm. Because yes, we grow up at our houses where we have chickens roaming around at home. But then we have not just got to understand how can we really make a good production out of this, because maybe sometimes because of knowledge that we lack. So if we really have people that have knowledge in terms of poultry production and setting up facilities to produce poultry such as layers and broiler chickens, I believe it can be one of those sectors that can help us, because it doesn't help us just having chickens roaming at home, giving birth yearly, but we do not, do production from them. And that goes along with the livestock, you know, the whole livestock system, especially here up north, you know, like statistics say we have more heads of cattle, above the red line compared to the whole, country. You know, but when it comes to us, you know, really producing, we do not really take this into consideration that we can really make money out of this livestock business rather than just keeping cattle over, you know, at home for status and all those other things. Yes, I know we have limitations such as, you know, exporting our cattle, but we really need to change our mindset in terms of this. Mm-hmm. And about the hydroponic system, mm-hmm. This really would be more preferably ideal for people that are in urban areas.
Okay.
And I think it's one area that we also need to emphasize that it can also contribute when it comes to food security. Because, you know,
you're explaining. It's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because food in urban areas is very expensive.
Okay.
Because most of the food there comes from South Africa directly to the retail shops.
Mm.
And people have to go to those retail shops to buy food. Right? So if people are able to set up their own systems at home, backyard gardens, using this hydroponic system, and hydroponic system is just a system where you grow food without soil. Yeah, because you know many households in towns, you know, they have limitation when it comes to proper soil. And also we know young people are now moving into these gated communities where it's just pavements and there's no soil. So once you have this type of system, you're able to grow your own crops, you know, and you're able to at least, you know, be increase your food basket at home, reduce on transport costs reaching to the retail shops. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm in town or in urban areas, especially Windhoek, I always find it a need to do smaller projects with people that are in these areas to set up backyard gardens. And many people are interested. The only thing is, number one, they do not have the skills to sustain these crops over time, which mm-hmm. is a good, there's a market for this, for us that have studied this. And then the time, they do not have the time to take care of these crops. That mm-hmm. is the only challenge I have seen for that.
Also, what role can maybe the youth play in promoting food security in the country?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I believe any government intervention or any intervention that we put up as a country that does not include the youth, you know, it's not talking about us securing our future.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know, like we say, the youth are the ones that are the future of tomorrow. So the youth should really take up an initiative to demand that more programs are set up when it comes to agriculture. You know, programs such as training programs, we need a lot of training facilities that can train young people in agriculture. We need a lot of access to capital, you know, with low interest. We need access to land. And young people should put themselves together, such as us forming cooperatives. Mm-hmm. If I have two or three of my friends, we can come together. We form a venture where we can produce, do production. That is how we are going to really take this agriculture up. And we also need to change our mindset that, yes, agriculture is a business, and we need to look at it into a really, like kind of 360 way, that it's not only about producing food on the ground, but let's also look at the supply chain, you know, the logistics system. If one can start a delivery business, you know, you take the food from the field to the market, you know, some can start this storage system business. You know, some can start marketing. So all of us need to play our part in this production of agriculture. And one thing we need to look at is agro-processing and value addition. Because I think this is where we are now, even as a country. That's what the government is talking about. That apart from just exporting or selling our whole raw products, let's process them into different products. Let's process them into jam. Mm-hmm. Let's process them into tomato sauce. You know, let's process them into all these products that we find on the shelves of these retail shops. Because that's where actually the money is. Apart from just selling your whole products, once you process them, you can also make extra income. I would love to speak to the youth is, number one, seek knowledge, seek training when it comes to this field, because agriculture, you need skills and knowledge if we are to sustain it for long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then seek mentorship where you can. There are a lot of trainings that people are offering out there free of charge, you know. Do go attend those trainings.
And then for those that have studied this course, for especially like me, we need to go out there and share our knowledge, train local farmers on the different farming systems that are out there. And then to those existing farmers that are already in production, you know, just to tell them to, number one, to form cooperatives. Because cooperatives, I think they are really going to assist, because all of us bring a unique set of skills. Some bring capital, some bring machinery, you know, some bring ideas. And this is how we are going to take agriculture forward. Yeah. And another thing is just, you know, let us look in the market what other skills we can bring along. Like for me, usually at times I'll be designing, branding and these stickers that you put on your products, let's say on your tomatoes and on your gems that you need to put on your, in the retail, on the shelves. Mm. So yeah, so on the side, I also do that, because when you have your product, you need, branding is one of the important components when it comes to agriculture or to our products. And that's one area that I see we neglect, in the, as farmers, we don't really understand it. So yeah, that's one aspect I would also love to talk on or to assist farmers on when it comes to breeding our processed products or value-added products.
Mm, thank you so much, Mr. Shudeni, for having you today.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. The time is 24 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, there you heard it from Mr. Shudeni, just indicating that, I mean, there's a need to reduce our imports. And, of course, he said that in order for the food insecurity to be achieved, all the stakeholders need to work together just to empower smallholder producers and, of course, improve infrastructure and logistics, especially in rural areas. Now, also, Shudeni indicated that to address food insecurity as well, we need research to ensure that the crops we produce are suitable for a specific condition of each area, as climate change affects different regions in a various way or in different ways. I mean, here in the north, it's very different, or we have the very different weather compared to the central, compared to the southern region, that what he meant. He also noted that we should also focus more on we should not just focus also on millet or on mahangu, but rather we now need also to explore on maybe looking at some other crops like rice, like potato. We're talking about also other sectors, not only the horticulture sector, but also he also mentioned that maybe we need also to look into the poultry sector in order to rather thrive in this or in addressing the food insecurity in the country. As well, he indicated that there is a need also to be to access capital for the young entrepreneurs or to the young horticulture producers, also to be able to access capital in order to also to improve the farmer, and as well as there is a need also for more training in order for them to gain more knowledge. And also he mentioned one of the important key that there's a need also to process our goods that we produce, not only just to sell as raw, but also just to add value and gain extra income. Now, lastly, on our news item, I'm going to give you just one last item that we have here, is that the Financial Intelligence Center has now presented its 2024 to 2025 annual report. And the director, that is Mr. Brian Isep, revealed that during the report period, the center provisionally restricted up to 96.9 million Namibian dollars in effort to combat money laundering and financial crimes. Now, on this, my colleague Peter Pato Moshela Lukolo bring us this update. We might take a listen.
As we are busy looking back to our morning scoop, today we are with my colleague David, who attended the launch of the FIC report and the annual report. So, David, how are you?
Good. How are you, Patema? How are you doing?
I'm very much fine. On Friday, you attended the launch a report of the FIC. What was this report all about?
Yes, thank you very much for having me. So it's a pleasure to be here. And when you talk about Financial Intelligence Center, it's one of the institution, or it's a center that is working through Financial Intelligence Act, and is responsible to combat money laundering and also illicit financial flow. Then on Friday, they have to launch their 2024-2025 annual report. And when you are running an institution, either an agency, you are mandated to make sure that you report what have you done,
right,
how much money you have used, and how did you use your resources, what are some of the challenges that you have seen. And it's part of the principle of governance, and it's part of also the principle of accountability. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, because in most cases we don't really see those critical institution presenting their points, or those critical institutions also explaining to the public what are they doing, what have they done, and what did they use, particularly the money which is allocated to them. Mm-hmm. And also to take out this suspicion of some institution that don't show up. And when you look at the Financial Intelligence Center,
mm-hmm,
when people talk about intelligence community, it's not really something that is being discussed. But in this regard, that is an institution which has to deal with money laundering, assisting anti-corruption commission, assisting the police, and also other institutions which are combating those. One of the things that was mentioned, maybe what I can mm-hmm, indicate, is that through 2024-2025,
yeah,
annual report, mm-hmm, they indicated that they produce around 565 intelligence report,
okay,
148 criminal investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And what is very interesting is that they provisionally restricted, stopped, or blocked,
mm-hmm,
transactions around 96.9 million. Mm-hmm. When people talk about the provisionary restriction of this transaction, it means that there were people who were busy with transactions,
mm-hmm,
which are illegal,
uh-huh,
which are not in line with the act.
Mm-hmm.
However, through this institution, it could be terrorism financing, or somebody want to evade tax, or want to put money under the table when you are dealing with Namibian business, community. But that was stopped,
mm-hmm,
which is also one of the, I think it's a good step looking forward regarding our financial system. But you also need to ask yourself this question to say, mm-hmm, but Emma, if you have around almost 100 million which were restricted,
yeah,
what is happening? What's wrong with our financial system? And it's also led us to ask ourselves a lot of questions to say,
mm-hmm,
it could be that our financial system is still have a lot of loopholes, a lot of holes,
mm-hmm,
that need to be fixed. And that was basically the content of the report,
okay,
and also looking forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. However, I believe you have stated some of the way they have addressed. Can you tell us how did the FIC address the issues of the grey listing?
Yeah, the issue of grey listing has been one of the critical issues, particularly in the Namibian public. As mm-hmm, Namibia was grey listed
February 2024,
mm-hmm, they were grey listed by Financial Action Task Force,
mm-hmm,
and they were given 13 actions that they need to work on, or 13 recommendations that they need to work on before, mm-hmm, they are removed from that grey listing list. And the director, Mr. Brian Hassem, indicated that FIC have tried to address, mm-hmm, around eight of those recommendations, and they only have five.
Yeah.
And what's also very interesting is that I asked the question to say, why Namibia is still put at
the blacklist?
No, not really to say a blacklist, mm-hmm, but it's high risk jurisdiction by EU.
Uh-huh.
Then he said he really do not know, mm-hmm, what motivated EU, because when you look at the report that they have given last year, they show that Namibia is progressing and they are trying to rebuild the financial system.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think is something which will really need some critical assessment. But when you look at the report, when you analyze the report, you can get a different view. Mm-hmm. However, I also ask him some questions related to that. And I think after this, the listeners will be able to listen to mm-hmm. that content.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Cool.
Right, there you had it. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And the time is 32 minutes in the afternoon o'clock. And this was the end of our show, or rather, thank you so much. And I will hand over to my colleague, the Michael Shavari, to take us through the unpacking of the day. Please do not go away. Just stay tuned for the next program that is unpacking of the day. From your Lisa Shimi, it's a good day. Enjoy the rest of your day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omudiha utekiru wakaguna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao. Ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshefa ya Namibia. Ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe. Yongeshefa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma. Konarahe tatuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM. The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any